David Hochberg strolled into our studio. Hi, David Hochberg.
Hey, John.
How are you? Hold on. There you are.
He's Adam Levine's biggest fan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I love Adam Levine. I can't get enough of Adam Levine.
You're making that up now, aren't you?
Big poster. I was at the concert last Friday.
Oh, no kidding. Where were they?
At the United Center.
I didn't hear about that. Was that in all the papers?
It was in all the papers. It was sold out. And
how was the show?
The show was great. I'm not a big fan, but all the women there were 19,000.
He's kind of pretty.
Oh, my God.
They
were
kind of pretty.
Crazy. Yeah, so put on a great show. I mean, there was an hour and a half, just solid rocking out. So, yeah, it's fun. Good time. Wife had fun. That's all that matters.
Yeah, no kidding.
Rocking out to Maroon 5. I'd like to see David Hochberg doing that.
I was in the back eating hot dogs in the suite while they were rocking out and answering emails. But my wife had a good time.
You're that guy from Pearl Mortgage. We do your commercials on the radio. Sometimes you sing to our studios.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And I just had a couple financial questions I wanted to ask you. The market is closing in on 27,000. We're up 270 points today. Does that mean anything to, now it's up 282, to me as a potential home buyer or a person with equity in my house? Does this mean anything to me?
Well, it typically means higher interest rates because when the market's good, the bond market typically has to go higher in order to attract the money into bonds that would typically go into the stock market. So it typically means when the stock market's rocking up that, you know, interest rates are going to go up as well. And we've seen a correlation with that over the past year.
What's the 30-year fix right now?
Ballpark number. It's going to start with probably like 4.75.
Is that the right? Is that the right question to ask? Right, 30-year fix. That's the sort of standard bearer.
That's the bellwether rate that most people go for. At this time, a couple years ago, it was at 3.75. So now we're at 4.75, approaching 5.
Okay. So what?
So what? Exactly. I mean, it's the cost of money. If you're going to buy a house, that's the going rate today. Right? We still have people saying, well, I want 4.375. And I'm like, well, that's great. You're about a year too late, and I want to get into a pair of 32-inch pants. I go, that's not happening anytime soon.
Still, I had a 10.5. I had a 10.5.
And you were happy.
I was, because we were out of the teens then.
Yeah.
Granted, that was a long time ago. So does that point of mine make any sense to you? Should people be happy? I mean, don't complain about 4.75.
The market is the market, John. You can't fight it. You can't fight it. You can't fight it. And if you want to sit there, wait for it. Are you a bond trader? The answer, most of the people that are listening aren't bond traders, except the bond traders that are listening.
I know somebody who wants to buy a house.
Yes, sir.
They have $35,000 saved.
Okay. How's their credit?
I don't know the answer to the question you might be asking, but I'm going to say good.
Income?
Say 100.
Are they renting or are they currently own another house?
Renting.
Okay, so they don't have to sell a house to buy another house.
Correct, but that means all they've got is 35 to put down.
That's a lot of money.
For what? I mean, so what can you? So if you want to put 20% down with 35,000 down,
right? You're gonna have to. That's. I mean, you're talking $300,000 home, for example. 10% down is $30,000.
Okay, but right, the closing costs. So then they'd have to pay PMI, wouldn't they? They'd have to pay
you
mortgage
don't like,
insurance.
Right. We've
Who
had this
does?
A Do lot you? Of people. I love PMI. PMI is a cost. You have life insurance, John?
You should put 20% down and not pay.
Sure. Everybody should walk 10,000 steps a day. And
no, but
happy.
I mean, you should hear me out.
I'm trying.
I thought the logic was wait until you have 20%.
That's an old school logic. Yes. That some people still live by that, but flip side is that most people nowadays trying to buy their first home have about $100,000 to $200,000 worth of student loan debt. Most people today are buying homes with $20,000 to $40,000 worth of credit card debt, which is a little crazy, in my opinion. I'd much rather them buy a home for 3% down, which you could get into with the Fannie Mae loan, Freddie Mac loan for 3%. You get into a FHA loan for 3.5% down. If you're a veteran, you could get in with zero down. If you're buying in a rural area, there's USDA loans for zero down as
Why
well.
Why are you so anxious for these people to buy homes, except that they might use you to get the money?
I'm not anxious at all. I'm just answering your question. I'm just saying there are alternative financing options out there that you do not need 20% to put down. I would much rather, okay, I'll give you a yin to your yang, because I know you like my yangs. Let's say that the person with $35,000 has $10,000 worth of credit card debt, which most likely they do. That $10,000 worth of credit card debt on a minimum monthly basis, a 4% minimum payment, is $400 a month, okay? So I would much rather have the buyer of a home take 10 G's out of that 35 and pay off that $10,000 worth of credit card debt, because that $10,000 to finance it is only going to cost them a couple of bucks a month instead of $400 a month on their credit cards. Not only is it going to be a lot less of a monthly payment by them paying off their credit card, even with the PMI, their credit scores are going to go up. Higher the credit score, lower the interest rate. Lower the interest rate, lower the monthly payment. Higher the credit score, lower the PMI they're going to be paying as well. So there are a lot of things going on. I respect your old school thinking that you need to put 20% down.
Well, in a perfect world, you've got 20%. Better to not be paying PMI, right?
Well, that's your opinion. But some people...
No, but I mean, if I didn't have any credit card debt and I had money to put down, I would put down 20% and not pay PMI. I'm throwing it out the window then.
But a lot of people don't have, if you're buying a $300,000 home, $60,000 to put down for 20%, then another $4,000 or $5,000 in closing costs, right? Title, insurance, attorney.
Right, because with $30,000 down, you can only afford a $150,000 house, which is plenty of house, depending on where you live and what you want to do. But I mean, that would be the threshold in my scenario. If you have $30,000 and you don't want to pay PMI, then you probably can't get something for over $150,000.
Well, that's 20% down.
Correct. Is the other side of the ledger, though, say if PMI is over here, is the other side of the ledger that if you go ahead and pay private mortgage insurance, you only put 10% down, but here's what you get: the deductibility of your mortgage payment
up to a certain income level. Check with your CPA,
and you get to also enjoy the appreciation of that home each year, right?
Yes.
I mean, that has to offset some of the expenses on the other side.
Not only are you doing that, you're also paying down your principal, and when you get to a 20% basis, you could contact your lender to see if they'd be willing to drop the PMI, and then the PMI goes away.
Ella said we had to take a break. We will, and come back with if you've got a question or comment about this. The number is 312-981-7200. I've been arguing with him for months and months now about whether or not somebody should buy a house without 20% down. You know what I think is in the back of my mind too, David, is the trouble that everybody got into before the real estate crash when they were buying houses with no money down or were borrowing 102%. You know what I mean? You appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I could appreciate that, but the wild west days of mortgages are over. The days where you could do negative amortization and you could get in with no money down and you could buy seven different condos by putting a $5,000 deposit down and buildings would get sold out and people were playing the float where they would sell the condo before, you know, after it got done to somebody else and make a quick 50 G's and then go buy, instead of one more, they'd go buy two more. And then what happened? It was a musical chairs, and you know the music stopped, and there were only one or two seats left for about $100.
Yeah, exactly.
And the whole thing collapsed.
What did you make of the story? A colleague of ours here came in. Somebody knocked on her condo door, and for that six flats said, hey, we want to buy you all out and turn this into rentals.
Yeah.
And other friends of ours, it was a high-rise condo.
Yeah.
And somebody bought the whole thing out, and they all had to move out.
Yeah.
What's your comment on that?
Actually, we helped a lady who was in that condo that you're talking about buy a home in Park Ridge. So she was able to liquidate the condo, made a ton of money, and bought a single-family house to get her kids into the school district that she wanted in Park Ridge. What do I think is going on? Well, if you take a look at it, Chicago real estate, even though it's expensive in our eyes, is still cheap when you're comparing it to New York and San Francisco and California. So when you compare it to the coasts, it's still very, very, very cheap. When you're talking about $300-$400 a square feet, they're paying $1,100 to $1,500 a square feet on the East and West Coast.
So are people converting these condos into rentals or to single home?
They're decommissioning.
Single family.
Yes. So what they're doing is both. But if you take a look at what your friend was doing, right? There's a 6-unit condo building. If you run the numbers, it all makes sense, right? It might not make sense at first, but when I started running the numbers, it all makes sense. You buy it for 2.5, okay? The most expensive part about building a condo is building it, right? Foundations and putting the outside up. That's all done. So what are you going to do? You're going to go in, you're going to hire a real estate attorney to change the property index numbers. You're going to put a wall up in between. Either you're going to make one ginormous single-family home, or you're going to do two single-family homes side-by-side with an attached wall. Okay, with the wall that separates the unit. If you're spending that much money, think about it, okay? You're going to go down, have a 2-3 car garage in the basement, and you could finish the basement. So not only do you have three stories, you have four. Plus, you've got roof access with beautiful views of the city.
For the two families?
For two families. It could be one family that wants a gigantic house in the middle of the city, which might sound crazy to some, but when you start doing it per square foot, it's $400 or $500 a square foot. If you're coming in with all the stuff that's going on in the West Loop with all this technology company, they're farming in, you're bringing in a ton of these executives that are used to California real estate numbers. San Francisco, it's like $1 million for an 1,100 square foot condo.
It's crazy.
Nuts.
It's crazy.
New York, they're paying $700-$800 for a parking space. So when you start looking at it like that and these executives coming in, deconverting these condos into single-family homes or two single-family homes makes sense on paper. And it might be crazy, like, okay, well, you're going to pay $4 million for that, and you're going to pay $800,000 in real estate taxes. Yeah, well, somebody's going to pay $80,000 in real estate taxes. Yeah, somebody's going to pay that. And it what might seem expensive to our listeners, and me and you,
yeah,
which is a little mushuggy, yeah, right? it fits right in the wheelhouse of somebody else that could easily afford to do that.
Yeah.
So I think what you're going to see is a lot more of that out there. Don't be surprised. And in the condo decks and bylaws, it's all done by square footage. So the larger units get more of that kitty that they're throwing out there.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. As my friend
unfortunately,
well knows.
Unfortunately, if it's over that 75% or whatever that number is, where everybody's got to vote, and you're the one that doesn't want to vote, and the other five want to take the cash. Guess what, sister? Boom! Start packing your stuff. But in this case, she told me that it fell through, and the person with the money and the company with the money backed out at the last minute.
Yeah, but and, other friends of ours, they didn't. They didn't necessarily want to move, and they did.
They took over the entire building.
I'm amazed that's able that can even happen.
It happens all the time.
We're out of time. It's 2:30. Ella said, you got to take a break because we want to read part of a story in the Tribune about something that happened on the L the other day that was a sad story that has a silver lining. It's really heartwarming. We'll talk to the woman that's behind that. It was on page one, I think, of the Tribune today. We'll get to all of that. And David, thanks for coming in and saying hi.
Thanks for having me, bud.
By the way, if people want to reach you, how do they do that?
Very simple, 312-751-1333. They could go to WGNDavid.com. We started a daily reverse mortgage newsletter that they could go to WGNDavid.com to sign up. It's free. It'll go out every morning, and valuable information about reverse mortgages.